Thank you. Actually, I'm glad that the science was covered in that presentation because I didn't want to go into it too much myself. So I've just used a couple of the standard definitions of synthetic biology here. But what I want to point out is that synthetic biology can both be viewed as a sort of distinct field in its engineering approach to biology. But it's also strongly connected to other scientific fields, particularly in the context of converging technologies. So, particularly the boundaries of low-earth information technology, nanotechnology, and genetic engineering. So this connection with other scientific fields and past advances means that synthetic biology is likely to be covered by existing international regulations. However, the rules were obviously not specifically developed with synthetic biology in mind, so there may well be a need for awareness-raising interpretation efforts, and indeed for a different approach to governance, which is where I'll come to as the end point. So I've sort of had the general title International Governance Efforts. What I particularly focus on is regulation in terms of legally binding treaties, but also standards, guidelines, codes, and voluntary nature. The ones that I choose to focus on are those that are potentially universal. That means that any state, with no restrictions based on geography or economics, is able to sign up to those agreements. And the main use of international regulation is coordination of state action in any area in which there's a high degree of international interdependence, where separate action by individual states will be insufficient to address issues of common concern. And the clear argument that synthetic biology has a number of applications and impacts in such areas. So I think it's probably similar to the areas in which biotechnology in general is governed. This is my classification of the areas, they obviously could be done differently. So there's seven main areas of regulation: arms control, health, environmental protection, trade, drugs control. Well, of course, social impacts mainly relates to human genetics at the moment, and development, in which there aren't specific rules on the development aspects, but development is covered within the rules in the other areas. But as you can see, there's also ways of breaking down different areas, and the ones that I'm particularly focused on later on are the ones that come within biosafety and biosecurity within the health field. So, the first thing to look at is which of the existing regulations will cover synthetic biology. And I think it's clear that quite a few of them, because of the way they set out their scope and definitions of technology and science, will cover synthetic biology. So, the first one to look at here is the Biological Weapons Convention. Now, this prohibits states from developing, producing, stockpiling, acquiring, retaining, or using microbial or other biological agents or toxins, whatever the origin or method of production, of types and quantities that have no justification for prophylactic, protective, or peaceful purposes. Now, each review conference to the Biological Weapons Convention takes place every 5 years, so this last one was in 2006. They issue a final declaration which reaffirms state commitments, and in each of these declarations has been a reaffirmation of the scope of the convention being comprehensive enough to cover all developments in science and technology that are relevant to the convention. And the review conferences are specifically mandated to be considering scientific and technological developments. So another example is the definition of biotechnology that's used within the Convention on Biodiversity. It's Cartagena Protocol on Biosafety, and the more recent Nagoya Protocol on Access to Genetic Resources. So these all share the same definition, which is produced in Article 2 of the Convention on Biodiversity. Biotechnology being any technological application of use of biological systems, living organisms or derivatives thereof, to make or modify products or processes for specific use, which covers synthetic biology. Similarly, the World Health Organization's Laboratory Biosecurity Guidance. This specifically uses a new term of valuable biological materials, so it extends its reach beyond pathogens and toxins to cover other organisms. This is a list of those that it covers. Again, this would seem to be adequate to cover synthetic biology. So we have a slightly more unclear example, which is the agreement on trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights. Under Article 27, which covers what areas of technology can be patented, it would seem clear from this that synthetic biology should be able to be patented. But there's some states that are concerned that because it deals with life forms, it should be excluded under a morality clause, so the second clause down. Now, this last clause, which is 27.3b, is a very controversial one. So at the moment, as it stands, you should be able to paint in anything that is a microorganism or a biological process. A non-biological or microbiological process should be patentable. Now, it was within the agreement originally that this would be reviewed after 4 years. And the review, which started in 1999, is still ongoing because no agreement has been reached on quite how you should define a microorganism. So there's a sort of question over whether things like cell lines, enzymes, and genes can qualify within the definition of microorganisms. But because no decision has been made at the international level, this is currently up to national state policy and the practices of national patent systems. So that's the regulations. What I also wanted to look at was what's going on within meetings of state parties to some of the regulations and their associated organisations to see what social awareness there is of the issues around synthetic biology. So here, starting again with the Convention on Biodiversity, in its last meeting of the parties, which was October last year, it invited governments and other organisations to submit information on synthetic biology to a subsidiary body on scientific, technical and technological advice, but also asked them to apply a precautionary approach to the field release of synthetic life, cell or genome. And the Convention on Biodiversity uses the precautionary approach from Principle 15 of the Rio Declaration, which has been somewhat controversial in terms of what this means in terms of what science should be doing and applying. So another meeting within the same field, so this is the ad hoc technical expert group on risk assessment and risk management of the Cartagena Protocol, has identified risk assessment of living modified organisms, which is its term for genetically modified organisms, produced in synthetic biology as a priority topic for developing guidance. It's very unclear at what point that will emerge, but a priority on their agenda. It's not got any further yet. So the next one is the World Health Organization. It has a scientific working group on life sciences research and global health security, which has had some mention of synthetic biology within its report. It was also mentioned in its 2005 report on life sciences research opportunities and risks for public health. But this was clearer area in which it's been raised, and it's been raised both within this advisory committee on variola virus research and within the World Health Assembly, which is a meeting of states parties, is to do with the fact that because you can now have information is out there on the synthetic, the information is out there on the gene sequence for variola virus. While under the World Health Organization, it's only supposed to be held in two laboratories worldwide. These are controlled and checked out by the World Health Organization to make sure their containment standards are sufficient. This point of this report is that this is no longer actually sufficient, because once you've got the information out there, you can't consider it to be restricted just to those two laboratories. So it mentions that states need to be aware of the implications of this, but also states that it would be illegal under international law for anyone to synthesise a variola virus genome. Okay, there's further points to this. States parties to the Biological Weapons Convention have been invited to provide background documents to the review conferences on scientific and technological developments. Around half of those submitted to the last review conference mentioned developments in synthetic biology, and it's thought to be very likely that that will increase for the 2011 meeting, so that will happen in August. There is, however, given the discussions I outlined above, relatively little going on within the World Intellectual Property Organization or the World Trade Organization and its Council on Trade-related Aspects of Intellectual Property Rights. I think that's partly because of this controversy and the fact that it's simply being left to national policy to work out at the moment. But I would suggest that, for example, they should be addressing the issue of how the existing rules might need to be adapted to balance effective coverage of synthetic biology with facilitation of open access initiatives. Now, this is the different approach to governance that I've been talking about. And it's really why I chose to highlight earlier the area of biosafety and biosecurity. So this new approach to governance is emerging in the international arena, not only in response to developments in synthetic biology, but to other scientific developments. However, synthetic biology is particularly prompted moves because of the dynamics, such as the degree of openness and exchange of information, and the fact that it's likely to shift science beyond the traditional academic setting of the lab. This approach emphasises the need for bottom-up design and implementation of oversight frameworks and changes to scientific culture through education, training and codes of conduct. So a couple of examples of where this has come up, and these are some of the recommendations that are coming out of the international processes. So the first block of four from the Biological Weapons Convention process. So states parties to the convention failed to agree a verification protocol in 2001. They then had a series of intersessional meetings, so they meet every year, to develop other means and methods of strengthening the convention. And twice during that process, this has included meetings looking at education and codes of conduct for life scientists, which would cover the moral and ethical obligations incumbent upon those using the biological sciences. And it includes this recognition that bottom-up oversight by scientific establishments and by scientists themselves is a necessary complement to any government controls. The second set of suggestions, which have a lot in common with the first, come from the laboratory biosecurity guidance issued by the World Health Organization. This was published in 2006 as an extension to its work on laboratory biosafety, and it promotes a development of what it calls a biorisk management culture, which would combine biosafety, biosecurity, and bioethics. In both cases, the new approach suggested explicitly recognises the need for input from a range of stakeholders. It will therefore benefit from participation of international scientific unions, industry associations and other non-state actors. And several such groups are already taking supportive action. So they have groups like the International Union of Biology and Microbiology issuing codes of conduct, which they hope all associations, national associations who are members will also take on. This quote is actually from an industry association, so it's a small association, mainly of European gene synthesis companies, which adapted a code of conduct for best practice in gene synthesis in 2009. So they're here recognising the biosecurity implications. And what it goes on to say is that they will specifically engage with the international processes taking place in order to carry this forward.
5 minutes.
Great. So I would say it's not surprising that this new approach to governance is emerging within the area of biosafety and biosecurity. Biosafety in this case, meaning laboratory biosafety. This is where major concerns have arisen so far, with the particular security communities coming very strongly to have awareness and be paying a lot of attention to developments in synthetic biology. But it's also because synthetic biology is still at the stage of being subject to physical containment, rather than release into the clinic or the environment. I think government efforts that will emerge in the future within the public health, environment and trade areas are likely to be incorporating this identification, analysis and management approaches that are already in use for other products and novel technologies. However, there is concern that current approaches may be inadequate to deal with the uncertainties involved in dealing with entirely novel organisms. So this is to do with the fact that there's a lot of uncertainty about whether the characteristic can be predicted or not. And if you've got uncertainty, then how can you do a risk assessment? So very quickly move from that to a few conclusions that I think we can take from this. The first is that change to international regulation is going to take many years of negotiation, and it generally lags far behind the pace of scientific development. This means that new approaches to governance can help fill a gap, and they should enable greater input from scientists into the future development of international regulation, as scientists are able to start demonstrating models that are useful, effective and appropriate. I think the current indications are that at the international level a mixed governance model will emerge, and this is particularly for the biosecurity area, where you'll get state-mandated self-governance efforts, which might seem like a contradiction in terms, but what I mean is at state level they'll say scientists should be putting into action self-governance measures, and then they'll actually come from the bottom up then and design their own governance measures. However, I think as was mentioned in the previous slide, that this sort of area is then not going to be without controversy. And I think self-governance is much less likely to be accepted as an approach for areas such as environmental protection when you come to the field release stage.